This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on April 12, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
As I said earlier, the next matter on the agenda, Draft Advisory Opinion 2012-08, repledge has been held over to the next public meeting as well. So the next matter on the agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2012-10, Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research Incorporated. And with us this morning, we have Mr. Joseph Sandler and Ms. Elizabeth Howard. Thank you. Welcome, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Commissioner McGann has joined us. Did that take longer than you thought?
I don't understand the question.
We'll give you time to
also my subjective intent.
Yeah, to submit comments for the record at a later date. And we have a presentation this morning by Ms. Esther Hayden from the Office of General Counsel.
Thank you, Chair Hunter, and good morning, Commissioners. Before you are agenda documents 12-22 and 12-22A, which consist of four draft advisory opinions responding to a request from Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research Incorporated. Greenberg Quinlan is a for-profit political research and consulting firm that intends to conduct telephone surveys using live operators of New Hampshire voters. These telephone surveys will be paid for either by federal candidates or by nonprofit organizations. The surveys will refer only to federal candidates and will not mention any candidates for state or local office. New Hampshire state law requires disclaimers on certain political telephone surveys. Greenberg Quinlan asks whether the Act and Commission regulations preempt the New Hampshire state statute as applied to Greenberg Quinlan's proposed telephone surveys. Draft A concludes that the Act and Commission regulations preempt the New Hampshire state law with respect to Greenberg Quinlan's proposed telephone surveys. Draft B concludes that the Act and Commission regulations preempt the New Hampshire state law with respect to the proposed telephone surveys paid for by federal candidates, but not with respect to those paid for by nonprofit organizations. Draft C concludes that the Act would likely preempt the New Hampshire statute at issue, but that the Commission is not the appropriate body to decide this question. Draft D declines to render an advisory opinion. We received two comments on the request and four comments on the drafts. Thank you, and I would be happy to address any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me start off with just a comment about this type of AO, which is certainly more unusual relative to the normal types of AOs we handle, where a question is presented about how the Act's going to apply to a specific transaction, and what that AO will provide if we grant it is, if we answer it in the way that the requester wants, is that provide some ironclad protection against a future FEC enforcement action. And these preemptions AOs are a different creature in the sense that the requester isn't asking us about potential liability with respect to the FECA, but how whether or not state law may threaten them with a potential enforcement action in the future, and we've handled, I think, only just one of these before, and I guess one of the ways in which to think of this is, and I think that the requester acknowledges in his remarks, is that we really aren't preempting per se. We don't have, as the requester rightfully pointed out, we don't have the ability to enjoin the enforcement of a state law by our own authority. That's something that's lodged in the courts. Under our system of constitutional government with checks and balances and separation of powers and dual sovereignty and all that, an agency or an entity or a body does not have the authority to define its own jurisdiction. That's left to the courts. But the commission has, the requester and other commenters have pointed out, the commission has weighed in on its opinion of the extent of its jurisdiction. And so it is a little bit of a different situation than we normally find ourselves in typical AOs. But first question I guess I should I would ask of Mr. Sandler is what, in this specific situation, what is it that an AO provides? If the commission were to issue an opinion saying the state law that is at issue is preempted by the FECA, what does that provide to you?
Well, Commissioner Peterson, first of all, the courts have repeatedly held that the issue of preemption is an appropriate one for the commission to weigh in on in the first instance, and have repeatedly deferred to the commission's interpretation of the scope of sections 453 in these preemption matters. The court did it in Weber versus Haney, the Court of Appeals, the Eighth Circuit. They did it in Tepper versus Miller case, the 11th Circuit, and in several other cases. So what it provides is an interpretation by the courts, interpretation by the agency that's entitled to standard core Chevron deference in the event that there is a court case. And because of that, one would anticipate, and it's been the case in other situations, that the state government would recognize that the commission's interpretation is pretty conclusive in these circumstances, maybe obviate the need for litigating the matter. Secondly, when you say that Commissioner Peterson, that the commission's only done this once, the commission
wait,
has
just to clarify, since I've been here.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm fully aware of how many times it's been done throughout the history,
right,
and it started early and often with the commission. I was just talking about with this group of commissioners.
Just wanted to clarify because
I apologize if I left that left that point unclear. I was just talking about since I've been here at the commission.
By our count, the commission has issued some approximately 80 advisory opinions over the past 30 years. On these preemption issues, not always finding preemption, sometimes not finding it, but clearly never saying this is not an appropriate issue on which the commission should render an advisory opinion.
Okay. And just I probably ought to state it right now that not that this is necessarily what you want to hear. I've found that the materials that we've received over the last, especially the last day, a lot of things coming in from you, from other commenters, from the New Hampshire Attorney General, has raised a lot of questions and has generated some research that I want to continue on. And I believe we have some time, and so I'm going to ask at the outset that we hold these over. But I do think it's important that we, as we think about this more, to ask a few questions of you if we could. And the main question that I have is. Your preemption analysis as it applies to nonprofits that engage in polling that that references federal candidates. First thing I wanted to ask was in your first set of comments, the ones that were received on April 11th, on the second page, in the second full paragraph, you include a sentence saying forbidding a nonprofit organization from conducting a poll about a federal candidate unless certain disclosures are made is a, quote, limitation on expenditures regarding federal candidates, end quote, that is within the scope of the preempted field. And upon first blush, what caught my attention about that is that, you know, a nonprofit that's engaging in just a poll isn't an expenditure as we normally would think of it in terms of, you know, express advocacy or, you know, or an electionary, well, We could, you know, try to tie in electionary communications and solicitations. And then I was thinking about it a little bit more. And maybe you could clarify this. Do you mean it more in the sense that the commenter, it was the comments that were submitted on by Perkins Coie, talk about how it's related to expenditures and that it's activity in direct support of express advocacy or electionary communications, and that's the way it's tied into expenditures. But I was just wondering if you could maybe clarify what you meant by that statement.
That's correct, Commissioner. We may have misspoken a bit in that regard. Technically, it's not an expenditure as defined by the Act when a nonprofit organization pays for the poll. But the issue is the scope of the field that's preempted here. And in the situation of field preemption, the issue is not whether the nonprofit who makes this expenditure, when it's not an electioneering communication or it may not be an express advocacy communication, the issue is who gets to decide that. Who gets to decide that? Suppose there's some issue about the content. Well, is this Express Ad? Is this poll? Is this really a push poll that actually veers over to Express Advocacy? It's not up. The Congress has made clear that issue is not to be decided by the state of New Hampshire. It's to be decided by the Congress and the congressional enactment, the Federal Election Campaign Act, is amended by BICRA and so forth, as interpreted by this commission.
And to an argument that could be made that your client is kind of trying to have it both ways, in that trying to, on the one hand, this state law is preempted from governing polling that references federal candidates, but on the FECA side, we're also outside the reach of, it was interesting to see a statement of reasons that the chair and Commissioners McGann and myself authored being cited for both by the New Hampshire Attorney General and yourself. I think I understand your point, but maybe you could flesh that out about why it is that you're both outside the reach of the New Hampshire statute because the field is preempted and not within the reach of the disclaimer provisions of the Act.
Because the reason, Commissioner, is that within the field preempted, the question of whether there has to be a disclaimer on a particular communication referencing a federal candidate, to the extent that that field is preempted, and we believe it clearly is, the fact that the Commission has decided that the Congress has determined not to impose a disclaimer requirement in that area is as much a preempt state action by the state as if it were there were regulation. This is not, again, and part of this is the sort of the nuances of the administrative law doctrine here. This is not a question of conflict preemption where New Hampshire's saying, well, we're going to impose a disclaimer requirement that conflicts with or in some way goes beyond what the federal disclaimer requirement is. This is a question of field preemption. If Congress decides we're going to define public communication a certain way and disclaimer is not required in this area, it's not up to the states to supplement or fill in that gap. That's what field preemption is about.
Okay. And the final question I have is, as I mentioned at the outset, there was a lot of paper flying left and right, and I think the last comments that were received from the New Hampshire Attorney General, you didn't have a chance to respond to because, you know, the clock was running out. But there was a sentence in there that that kind of struck me as interesting, and I wanted to just bring it to your attention. It's on page 2 of their comments that they submitted yesterday, and it's the first couple of sentences in the last paragraph, where it says, New Hampshire's disclaimer requirement does not prevent or impede the ability of a federal candidate to pay for a telephone survey. The existence of a disclaimer and the payment for the survey where that disclaimer is required are two distinct transactions. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that attempt to try to draw that distinction between requiring the disclaimer and paying for the survey. And so long as we weren't preventing you from conducting the telephone survey, then we're in an area that's outside the reach of the preemption clause in the FECA.
I'd say 2 points in response to that. First of all, contrary to what the New Hampshire Attorney General's office represented to the commission, the New Hampshire statute is a campaign finance statute. It's in a title called Elections in a chapter 664 that's entitled Political Expenditures and Contributions. So that the suggestion that somehow this isn't within the New Hampshire campaign finance regime is completely misleading. Secondly, the same thing is true. You could say, well, we're just requiring a disclaimer. We're not preventing it. The same thing was true in the advisory opinion issued about the Houston sign ordinances. Nobody said that Congressman Archer couldn't put up his signs. Houston was just saying they had to put all this other language on it. Commission said, too bad. It's not that disclaimer. You know, what goes on a sign, you know, promoting a federal candidate is exclusively the province of the Federal Election Campaign Act. Preempted. And similarly, the Sonnellan 1978 advisory opinion about requiring a party affiliation to be put on political advertising under Washington state statute. Doesn't prevent you from advertising. You just have to put your party affiliation on. In response to the candidate that didn't want to have to abide by that Washington State requirement. Asked if it was preempted, the commission said yes, it was.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have
for
right now.
Commissioner McGinn.
Thank you. And thanks for coming. I don't know if I have too many questions for Mr. Sandler. I've read all the comments and all the drafts, and to me, draft A makes the most sense. There's a little edit to a footnote that I think could give the wrong impression, but I actually found, of all the comments, the ones that were the most influential to me were the ones filed by the New Hampshire Attorney General. And I was going to leave with that line just to sort of watch your face, but they convinced me that it clearly preempts. I mean, they are they're wrong in so many ways. And, you know, just sort of starting from the beginning, right out of the gate, the question is whether Congress intended to preempt state law. Well, not really. It's whether the act preempts it, right? I mean, we're not really, they're sidestepping the first step right out of the gate. And then they try to say it's outside FECA's preemptive regulatory scheme. Well, not really. I mean, they're putting disclaimers on campaign calls, essentially. That's clearly within FECA. And then they use what's really fashionable. I call it the disclosure mania trick, where it simply requires disclosure. Well, that's a great argument when you're trying to uphold a disclosure regime as opposed to a ban, but that doesn't seem to get them anywhere. The fact that they're calling it disclosure tells me that they're admitting that it is essentially a disclaimer disclosure regime, which again is what FECA does for these committees. Then I read the law. Calling voters on behalf of, in support of, or in opposition to any candidate for public office by telephone, which I assume includes federal candidates. It sounds a lot like a coordinated expenditure that a party committee make, and in opposition or support of, if you say support candidate Joe for the public office of, that's clearly an expenditure. This seems to reach even expenditures. Can't do that. And then part B, kind of beyond their scope, but when you start talking about calls that imply or convey information about the candidate's character, status, what's that? Is that like Facebook status? What is it? Is that like single? I mean, what is that? You know, not only is it kind of our turf, it's vague. And then I like the likely calling in a manner which is likely to be construed by the voters to be a survey or poll to gather statistical data for entities, organizations which are acting independent of any particular political party, candidate, or interest group. So. What I don't understand about the law is what if it is actually an independent expenditure? They're essentially saying you have to still put some sort of disclaimer on the call that makes it sound like it's not independent because it's in support of a candidate. But yet FECA, BICRA, and every court case says you still have to put the not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. So if a federal candidate, it's the New Hampshire Democratic Party did a poll or did an advocacy piece that comes within the push poll. I mean, I'm not sure where the line is, but if they did a piece where, for whatever reason, the federal law required the not authorized by, the state's trying to essentially undo that. That just doesn't make any sense. It was nice of them that they agreed with me and two of my colleagues that polls don't require disclaimers under federal law. Doesn't answer the question. I think Mr. Sandler's comments on field preemption just knocked it out of the park. Just flipping through other things that I found. And they cite a bunch of other cases saying, well, the states still have a role, and they sort of throw the federalism argument. This isn't about federalism. This is a different situation. It's about federal elections. The Constitution makes clear that the House and Senate are the judge of their elections, and they're the ones that can pass laws. That doesn't mean that the FEC can just start dictating ballot access or contract terms between consultants. I mean, they cite the Karl Rove case versus Dick Thornburg. Okay, FECA doesn't preempt state contract law, no kidding. That's not what we're talking. None of these cases have anything to do with disclaimers on phone calls. And then sort of again with a flourish here about old AOs, 8127, they say, well, this AO doesn't discuss, does address disclaimers. It does so only with respect to disclaimers made in political advertising, not polls. But the state law converts polls into political advertising. So if this state law reaches political advertising, that seems to me that actually hurts their argument. And then to turn to the other comment, Commissioner Peterson brought up this part. Again, I sort of call it the disclosure mania argument. New Hampshire disclaimer requirements does not prevent or impede the ability of a federal candidate to pay for a telephone survey. And I thought, well, yes, it does, because it's vague. If you're going to hesitate to do something, that still impedes. Whether or not that's a sufficient constitutional harm is a different question. But to say it doesn't impede, it certainly would cause people to think twice. And then they try to say, well, this isn't really the funding of the call, and they try to draw some differentiation between campaign financing of it and the content. But for FECA purposes, that doesn't matter. It's still a FECA issue. And I love this line. While a direct limitation on how much a candidate may spend on a survey might arguably be preempted, might arguably? A direct limitation on how much a candidate may spend on a survey might arguably be, not is, might arguably. That's an arguable proposition in the state of New Hampshire? That to me, they lose all credibility when they reduce that sort of thought to writing, and it really gives away what's really at stake here. Then it concludes, regulations that address the content or conduct of the telephone poll do not involve payment considerations. Regulations that address the content do not involve yes they do, because who pays for it? That could decide what you may have to say or not say. While the disclaimer requirement may have an effect on the federal candidate or committee's decision to pursue telephone polling, may have an effect, this is far too attenuated to constitute regulation or expenditures in the same fashion that FECA regulates expenditures. I'm not sure what they mean, the too far attenuated. That doesn't really answer the question about field preemption. To me, I agree with the observation Mr. Sandler made, merely because Congress did not impose a disclaimer requirement on polls does not mean they didn't do that. I think that was a conscious choice by Congress. Recall prior to McCain-Feingold the disclaimer laws, and back in the day, even campaigns didn't have to put disclaimers on everything, right? You had to put it on solicitations and express advocacy. But that didn't mean states could swoop in and put disclaimers on phone calls. The commissioner went 3-3 on that point in rulemaking. I don't recall any state saying, well, now that means we can, that means the field's not really preempted. We can come in with phone calls. Maybe some tried, but I think those were all turned aside. But there's a lot of these state laws that creep up. You know, like Ohio has this law, you have to state the treasurer's name. You know, and every so often, it's like every 10 years, somebody in Ohio thinks, well, that applies to federal campaigns, and then you have to sort of say, no, you know, this is a federal issue. To me, I see it as the same sort of thing. The yard sign issue is another one. It's one thing to say you can't put yard signs in the median of the road because it's a safety hazard. It's another thing to say you got to load it up with a bunch of state-required disclaimer. You can't do that. To me, this is the same sort of thing. Whether or not it's a poll or a push poll, to me, is not the issue. I think the best statement of the law is in the comments by the Perkins Coie lawyers on page 4, where they state the proper preemption test in this case is instead whether a state law applies, quote, with respect to election for federal office. It's much broader. Remember, the act as passed was intent to influence all this broad language, merely because the court limited it in some instances to avoid vagueness, overbreath, or impermissible banning of speech doesn't mean the act wasn't designed to cover this. The one question I do have, though, for Mr. Sandler, is I think it's easy for me to say campaigns, party committees, and the like that FECA preempts the state law. If you're not one of those and you're a nonprofit, which is not necessarily within the jurisdiction of the act, but could do things within the jurisdiction of the act, could you help me think through how I thread that needle? Electioneering communications are not unambiguously campaign related, but they're campaign related, for example, right? They're still part of the act. This is not electioneering communication that's TV only, all that. But it seems to me that when it comes to this sort of activity, there's probably some analogies to be drawn as to how far the field goes. But what the concern is, I don't want to inadvertently have an AO that broadens the commission's jurisdiction in ways that the act, it where the field is and where the statutory line is for agency ability to do are two different questions in my mind, and I need some help threading that needle so I don't inadvertently step all over myself.
Right. Well, those are two different questions, Commissioner, and in basically carving out an area of regulation, including disclosures and disclaimers, with respect to communications paid for by nonprofit organizations that reference federal candidates, I think Congress was clearly extending the scope of the field to that. Now, to say, well, it's only broadcast and not, they decided not to impose disclaimer and disclosure requirements if it's a telephone or mail, doesn't change the scope of the field. It just means that in that area, those areas, Congress determined not to impose a regulation. And I think your example highlights this. What happens if there's a poll that veers on the line of actually being express advocacy? And so that sponsor of that poll, say taken by our client, which is not the case here, then it would require commission disclaimer. And who's going to and you say, well, in that case, it's preempted. But in the other cases, it's not. Well, who's going to decide whether it's express advocacy? Attorney General of New Hampshire, with respect to a federal candidate? That's not what Section 453 says. It says that job is up, that's exclusively the province of the commission.
If a poll contains express advocacy, though, at that point, it's really not a poll. It's an expenditure. I mean, it's in the statement that some of us authored on the difference between polls and push polls kind of a misnomer because it to me gives a bad name to real polls. And it's not really up to the pollster to prove they're a real pollster. I mean, essentially, a push poll is a media term for the sort of quick phone call that says, so-and-so is a very bad person, he's done all this stuff, and remember all this when you go to the polls on Tuesday. It's usually two or three questions. They really don't take the data. There's no crosstabs, there's no marginal. It's, real polls are kind of, and this is something that the commission has struggled with, in my view, because real polls actually do look a lot like express advocacy, because they say, are you a likely voter? Who are you going to vote for? And then they test messages. If you know that Joe Sandler stole your car, would that make you more likely to vote for Joe Sandler? And it's always going to be testing hard messages. That doesn't make it a push poll. That makes it a real poll, right? The polling universe is usually not tens of thousands of people. Sample sizes are n equals 400, n equals maybe 800. You probably need a lot more calls than that. But you're not. Even if you lose the pre-Buckley intent, the influence standard, you're not influencing enough people to even come within that as far as making it express advocacy. But you could have calls that, well, no, this is a poll. No, it's not. It says vote against so-and-so. And it's not you're testing a message. But the New Hampshire law, I think you're right, they sort of decide. It seems to say New Hampshire can decide that. That's for federal candidates. That doesn't make any sense to me. But I appreciate the answer. Exactly. I think it's the right way to go, and I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? No. Okay. I agree with most of what my colleague said, and I think draft day is the right answer here. We're not going to vote on it today, and I think some of us might want to put out a revised version, in part to respond to some of the comments and hopefully to garner four votes with our colleagues. So I think you should expect another draft to be made blue in the near future. Does that sound right? Okay. And then we'll hold this matter over into the next public meeting, if that's okay with you.
Right. All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. We're going to take a five-minute recess and so reconvene at 12:30 to consider draft advisory opinion 2012, free speech. Thank you.